My name is Amy, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Amy.
Good morning. I was asked to speak this morning on the topic of our threefold recovery, and as defined by the delegates at this year's World Service Convention, spiritual, emotional, and physical recovery is the result of living the overeater's 12-step program. Now, I have something written down here because I spent last Sunday morning sitting out in my backyard thinking about what I wanted to talk about this morning, and I just took a pad of paper and I just started writing and writing and writing. And knowing that I had about 20 minutes, I thought, oh, this will be 20 minutes. And after I typed it up and I read it to my husband, it was about 5 minutes. So that tells you about my life in OA, which 14 years and 5 minutes is really quite concise, but it sort of gives you a little brief history of where I've come from. And I'd like to read it, which is where I'd like to start, and then I'll expound on it a little bit more. So I hope you don't mind me reading this. I was 13 in 1969 when I went on my first diet, and that diet mentality continued for roughly 22 years until I found a food plan that I began following. I was 35 years old. I'm 46 today. Our disease is one of random eating, which is a big problem for me, along with binge eating, most of which I did after dinner until I fell asleep, and especially when I was alone. I attended my first OA meeting on July 25, 1988, at the suggestion of a therapist I had only spoken to at an hour session, who keenly observed my obsessive behavior and my obsessive constant thoughts about food. It has been 14 years since that first meeting, and I've never stopped practicing the principles of this program. 2 years into this program, I still couldn't decide if I was truly a compulsive overeater until my new husband at the time of 3 months was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. I spent an entire month shoving food into my mouth, not wanting to feel the feelings I was experiencing. 10 pounds gained, and finally accepting my powerlessness and surrendering to myself and to my sponsor that I was willing to begin working the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. I have not worked this program perfectly, yet I continue to gain insight each year and even more after each new surrender. I've had to let go of certain foods over the years that time and again I would binge on, including processed sugar. Actually, it's been 6 years since I've used sugar. I no longer can hide my feelings in these trigger foods. I choose not to drink alcohol, use tobacco, or caffeine. Taking care of myself today includes taking my medications each morning and evening for my bipolar disorder, eating 3 balanced meals a day, exercising regularly, writing in my journal, helping others, reading OA literature, and prayer meditation. I have a lot of tools in my toolbox that I've collected in the last 14 years to maintain recovery from compulsive overeating. I've talked about some of my experience with physical recovery. The emotional leg of this threefold recovery process for me has been a combination of many, many, many meetings and counseling. I was fortunate to begin Overeaters Anonymous in San Diego, California, where in some days I had the luxury of attending 3 meetings a day, one at 7 in the morning, 12 noon, and 7:30 p.m. at night. I once committed to 90 meetings in 90 days, which was successful and fairly easy to do when they had 125 meetings a week I could go to. When I moved to Spokane in January of 1994, I attended the Saturday morning 9 a.m. meeting. I never thought I could learn so much about myself in such a small town compared to San Diego, with just 7 or 8 meetings a week. But miracles happen in this program, and I am one of those miracles. I've been fortunate to enhance my growth with counseling ever since I've been in Overeaters Anonymous. We all face challenges in our lives, and for me, managing both a mental illness and an eating disorder have taken a lot of work to accomplish. But I would not be here today if it wasn't for all of you and your love and support and encouragement to keep coming back. Spiritual recovery has taken the longest for me to put my arms around and develop a relationship with a higher power. I talked the talk and acted as if for many, many years. What has helped me tremendously is the repetitious nature of this program and reading of OA literature I've done on my own and at meetings. Also, trusting the words and the process and maintain honesty with myself and others and loving myself as you all did the first time I stepped into these rooms. Keep coming back. It works. That's what I came up with on a sunny afternoon last Sunday. And I found just one reading I wanted to share with you in my four today. I finally put a piece of tape on the side of this book because it was really falling apart. The Four Today was the very, very first book I ever bought when I stepped into these rooms in 1988. And I always kept it in the bathroom on the back of the toilet, so every morning I knew I could read it and at least get some thoughts into my head that day, regardless of how the day turned out. Today I keep it by my bedside. Things shifted a little bit. But for this topic this morning on our threefold recovery, there was something I liked that was on November 22nd. It says, living pleasurably meant giving myself all the food I wanted when I wanted it. Unlike normal people who partake of the pleasure of eating with moderation, I was hooked on food. Soon, what once seemed pleasurable began exacting a price that drained all my resources, physical, emotional, and spiritual. I learned what all addicts eventually come to know: it is impossible to use my substance or activity to excess, be it food, alcohol, drugs, or gambling, and live either wisely or pleasurably. This is really hard for me to talk because I'm really quite humble about my recovery in this program. Because it seems like all of a sudden I'm here, and yet there has been many, many, many painful times in my life that I've had to experience to get here today. I guess it's painful because this is a disease and it takes a lot of work to recover from any disease, from any illness. And as I mentioned for myself, for me, I think the turning point has been mostly when I have truly taken responsibility for myself and became willing to do whatever I had to do to get well. I've had many starts and stops in this program. Food plan. Thank God I found a food plan. In 1991, a basic food plan that I use pretty much today that works. But over the years, I've had to work with my emotional recovery, and I'd always find myself back into the food because that's what I knew. That was my comfort, and that was the habit that I had developed since I was a child. Even up until just this year, I had a new job, and I was laid off after 2.5 months. And I thought I was doing fine for a couple weeks, and all of a sudden I found myself back into some old habits, sneaking in the kitchen and starting to nibble. I mean, that has been always my worst time with the food part of this program for me, was the nighttime eating. And the sneaking, the hiding, who am I fooling but myself? I mean, I can be, you know, think I'm hiding it from my husband, like, oh, he doesn't see what I'm doing. And I've had to make recommitments over time. And just this August 31st was another one of my surrenders, when I hit a bottom and I say, I can't do this. And I'm back to a clean 3 meals a day, nothing in between. And I can't tell you how that has empowered me, how I feel so much better. But what it's also done is all of a sudden, there's new feelings again. There's new feelings I'm having to deal with. I'm having to deal with my unemployment. I'm having to deal with, it's been a rough year, let me say. And I've basically done it absently. But for me, this threefold recovery, it's come in different stages for me over the years. You know, I know at times people will say, well, how are you doing? And if my food's doing bad, then I'll say, oh, I'm not doing well, you know. But if I'm in pretty good spirits emotionally, you know, but, you know, I can say I'm doing well, you know. It's so confusing sometimes in this program, because if I'm not doing it 100% perfect all the time, then I think I'm a failure. I mean, this dates back to when I first came into program in San Diego in 1988. We used to, on Saturday morning meetings, when we had 100 people in a room, we'd say everybody who had 30 days would stand up, you know, or under 30 days, stand up, and everybody would clap, you know. And I would be, you know, I would build up and build up, and I'd finally get a 30-day chip. And then I ate 2 extra green beans that day for lunch or something, and I'd have to start all over again. And I don't put myself in that position today. I allow some imperfection in my abstinence, but I do know that what has helped me in the food end of things is that for years and years and years, I had a sponsor who would have me write down my food every single day, write down the night before what I was going to eat. So I have been able to practice what portions are good for me and been able to get a fairly stable food plan. And I know there's a controversy about exercise in this program as far as the literature, but for me, it works. For my head, not only because I have an imbalance that says I need to stay balanced, not just taking medication, but my brain needs to stay well. And part of that is the repetition of my exercise on a daily basis. It's the same repetition in going to meetings. It's the same repetition in reading the literature time after time. But this is what I found that's worked for me. And this is, like I say, it's just for me. Everybody works their program a little differently, but I hold on to this so strongly because I'm finally growing up. You know, when I started counseling when I was 32 years old, my therapist said to me, I said, you know, how come I feel like I'm just starting to grow up? She goes, oh, that's okay. It happens in your 30s, you know. But I finally felt like I was starting to grow up. But, you know, food takes a lot of years away from you when you're hiding in the food and you're not dealing with your emotions. And at least for me, you know, I had a lot of catching up to do. But it was also sort of coupled with my history and my mental health. But today, I have to be honest. I'm in a new marriage for 3 years now. And let me say, sometimes it's difficult because I'm having to be very honest with my feelings today. And it's hard. Communication sometimes is hard. When I used to be able to just hide in the food and not deal with it. But I am so grateful for this program. I'm so grateful for all the tools. I use the telephone. I call my friends. My best friend is somebody I met in program back in 1990 who lives in Kansas, and we call each other at least two or three times a week. We're sort of co-sponsor each other, and she's my soul sister. She's my best friend, because it takes time in this program to develop those relationships. But the fellowship has really kept me coming back, because without it, I mean, truly, I believe for myself that when I stepped into the doors of OA, when I was divorced, I didn't have a job, I was just stripped emotionally, and I started showing back up, and I would get hugs from people, and they said, keep coming back, you know, and don't leave before the miracle happens. And for some reason, I just kept doing it. And I'm here to tell you that it works. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jackie from Stevensville, Montana, and I am a grateful recovering compulsive overeater, abstaining one day at a time for 4.5 years now, this particular abstinence. And I am a relapse survivor, which is part of my story, and you're going to hear a little bit about that today. I'm real grateful to be here, and it just amazes me constantly that the thread that ties us together. I heard so many things that Amy said that I felt deeply. You know, it just resonates with the core of us, because we really are brothers and sisters in this program. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about my history and program, too. I stood up all by myself for 34 years last night. It was kind of a unique experience, because I remember when I came into program, and even when I was into it for some time, when I started seeing, well, if I've been in 34 years, OA is 42 years old. And it was when I started seeing those people stand up for 20 years. It just amazed me how, you know, I just couldn't believe it. And I never, ever dreamed that I would be standing up in a meeting saying that I had 34 years in recovery. And, well, first of all, I really thought that, you know, you just stuck around, you got thin, and then you left. You know, that was the first reason. I mean, why would you stick around? I came in because I was fat, I wanted to be thin. Well, I found out it doesn't work like that. I found OA in Upland, California in July 3rd, 1968. And I was 29. And I'm 63 today. So you can see that this program has covered my life for all the significant changes, every one of them. And every single part of my life, this program has fit. When I chose to see that and experience that, there were times when I was busy or way too arrogant, or I graduated and I didn't need it anymore. A lot of that. I do not have a straight line recovery, and I wish that weren't so, but you know what? Every one of those bumps in the road taught me something, and it's why I'm here today in such a strong, fit spiritual condition, and I am really grateful for that. But I am a work in progress, and you'll hear me talk about Jeanette in a while. She's my 82-year-old sponsor, and we sit in meetings together, and she's still... Oh, yeah. And she's still having those moments of realization, and it's such a wonderful model for me. I thought I'd have it together at 40. And wouldn't you think at 50? And what about 60? And she's 82. She's still learning, and I finally got that, and it's okay. It's really quite wonderful that this life is such a mystery, that there are constantly revelations for us to enjoy and experience in sometimes not very happy ways, but they're okay. I want to read a little bit from the big book, which I didn't have time for, you know, for a lot of years, but I have time for it now. This is from The Keys of the Kingdom, and it's found on 275 of the fourth edition. And in the third edition, it's on 311. In the middle of the page, it says, and I'll use OA. OA is not a plan for recovery that can be finished and done with. It is a way of life, and the challenge contained in its principles is great enough to keep any human being striving for as long as he lives. We do not, cannot outgrow this plan. As arrested compulsive overeaters, we must have a program for living that allows for limitless expansion. Keeping one foot in front of the other is essential for maintaining our recovery. And I have really experienced that. I came in when gray sheet was the rule, and that's what you did, and you don't have two extra green beans, or you start over, and you know, all the rest of that stuff. And Alan reminded me last night when we were talking after the meeting about the literature table in those days. He was talking about how the books were, and there were a few others that he mentioned, and I remembered that. I had not thought of that in years. And the book that I remember being there was, and I'm a reader. So, you know, a literature table just draws me like a magnet. And so I had to read all those books. In those days, you had to follow your gray sheet for 21 days before you could speak. The good part was you spoke from recovery instead of not. And then you did your four step. I don't remember the first three. We didn't really talk too much about the steps, but you did your fourth step, and you gave it away to your sponsor because then you sponsored. And just like Alan said last night, that's when it was severed. You know, the connection was broken, and I didn't need my sponsor anymore because I'm now a sponsor. And I am speaking. Speakers were big. I was in California, and like she said, lots and lots of meetings. They were huge. And speaking was a really big deal, and it fed my very weak ego. I mean, I just became a star in my own mind. And it wasn't healthy because I just decided I knew it all, and you know, I really didn't need to go to meetings anymore. And besides that, OA had given me this life that had been in gray tones and now was technicolor. And I had gone back to college and I'd finished my degree, and I was, I divorced my first husband, and I felt free at last. And it was just so incredible. I was teaching, I had my two children to raise and my mother almost to raise. And that was the toughest part. And I won't even go there because I don't have enough time. When I graduated from the program the first time. I really was too busy. I was intern teaching. I had those two little kids who were primary grades at that time. I was taking my fifth year of college for my credential. I was brand new at teaching. I was really literally working and being a mother full time, and there wasn't time for meetings. Maybe today I would have found it, but I didn't think I needed to. I had lost 95 pounds. When I would see myself in a plate glass window walking by, I didn't know who that lady was in the blue dress with a straight skirt and a belt. I had no tie into her at all. She could have been anybody else on that street, but she wasn't me. And so that led me, that kind of thinking led me, also like Ellen talked about, I didn't do this dramatically, went out and binged and then just became crazy overnight. I didn't do that. I just, you know, a little tiny bit at a time started taking back the food. And when I left the meetings and wasn't going to hear the constant input, and I kind of put my literature aside. Wasn't a lot of literature in those days, but kind of put it aside. I didn't even own a big book. I don't remember. I have a few pamphlets from those old days, like Before You Take That First Bite and Just for Today. I had those, but they were safely tucked in a drawer so that, you know, nothing would happen to them, but I didn't pay any attention to them. And so what do you know? I was into relapse. And by that time, I was embarrassed about going to meetings, going back, because then I was heavy again. And, you know, after all, I'd been this superstar. And I mean, how could you go back and you're fat again? And so that went on for probably about 6 years that I really was not in meetings, except very occasionally. And then whammo, I met Ken in 1978. And that just changed my whole life. And where I had been eating for despair and depression and poor me, I've got all this burden and I'm taking care of everybody, and isn't anybody ever going to take care of me, and all that stuff that I thought I was eating about. Now I met Ken, and I am in absolute total bliss, and I'm eating because now I'm perfectly happy, and there's somebody to take care of me, and he did and does. And while I had been a very independent woman and very capable of taking care of myself, here was this man I could absolutely trust, and I just kind of melted and, you know, take care of me. And he was entranced with me in the beginning because I was so independent. So bless his heart, he's hung in there with me even when I just let him take care of me. So I can't say that I don't enjoy every minute of it, though. We got to our top weight together, and that my top weight was 270 pounds. When I first came into OA, I weighed 265. So now I came back in 1981 at 270. And what helped me then was Ken, because we both needed a program. Oh, I wanted to send my pictures around. We went automatically to Gray Sheet because that's what I knew. And it was in the old Dignity of Choice, which was there then in 81. And I recognized, well, I can tell you right this second exactly what Gray Sheet was, and I can tell you what portions fit which parts. And so that's what we did. And because I was doing it for Ken, it became very, very easy for me. I just slipped right back into the old pattern. We went to meetings all over Southern California, basically, because we were heavy-duty commuters. We lived in Big Bear Lake. I taught in Chino. Ken taught in San Bernardino at the juvenile hall. And so we just had this kind of circle, and we went to meetings all over what we called the West End. And I lost 75 pounds, and I had 10 and a half years of back-to-back abstinence. And I dabbled with sponsors because, you know, after all, I knew. So why did I need a sponsor? And my thinking is still pretty screwy. I gave lip service to the steps. Certainly we're talking about it in those days. We did have a big book, but Ken read it. I didn't. And as time went on, you know, Ken was quite a novelty. There weren't a lot of men, as you well know. And being as charismatic as he is, he got a lot of attention. And then they'd say, oh, hi, Jackie. And my ego got bruised. Poor me. Doesn't anybody notice that I've lost weight? Yes, okay. So, you know, the little girl is still very strong and active within me. So I decided to show them and him. So in Christmas of 91, I gave away 10 and a half years of back-to-back abstinence behind an Advent calendar with some Christmas goodies that my adorable daughter-in-law had brought. She's a teacher. I'm a teacher. We're all teachers. She had brought home from school. And so behind this Advent calendar, Ken's over on the couch. He can't see. And we're in the kitchen into these Christmas goodies. And that's where my second relapse began. And also very slow. Very slow. Totally ego-driven. Absolutely ridiculous. Didn't want to be lockstep with Ken anymore. Well, if he's going to keep abstaining, I certainly don't have to. Now, what was that all about? I don't know. Anyway, I gained 50 pounds. And in 1995, I decided that I was cured. And I just want to tell you what I discovered. I discovered that all you have to do is stop eating when you're full. I was no longer a compulsive overeater. Ken, what is it? It's so simple. You would just stop when we're full. Well, what was happening is that I was developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and my brain had created an appetite suppressant to help my immune system fight off this disease. And I was sick. In fact, I was dying. And I had a free fall weight loss of 85 pounds, and I'll tell you what, that was the most exciting thing. I mean, every time I saw the oncologist, I'm dying, but I'm losing weight. And we say we're not a little insane. I don't know. Well, my spiritual growth, which had been enormous in this program, it was in these rooms that my whole spiritual outlook had been expanded to a degree that I didn't even know existed. And boy, here was the time to really see where I was. And you know, I was very excited about losing weight, and that's just the funny part. But the serious side of that is I trusted my God so implicitly. I simply yielded. I absolutely gave it completely up, and I was ready, willing, and able to accept whatever healing was going to come about for me. And there were times it wasn't fun, and I'd say, Ken, I don't want to do this anymore. But you do whatever you have to do. And I found that out. And I followed directions. If my oncologist says you will do chemo for such and such, that's exactly what I did. If he said you will not have any fresh fruits, no fresh fruit. I did what I was told, probably, maybe, the first time in my life. That I didn't say, but how come, why, you know, what about the way I think I should do it? I didn't do that at all. And I remember laying in the couch in Big Bear, looking out at the pine tree swaying, just absolutely, totally comforted in the presence of Spirit, knowing that I was being cared for and loved and protected no matter what the outcome. I did not know what the outcome was going to be. And when I began my recovery, I started gaining weight. Then I was depressed. Then I would go moping into the doctor's office. But I'm gaining weight. And he'd say, Jackie, you're supposed to gain weight. You're getting well. This is good. No, I'm gaining weight. And I did get back into the food. Some of the things, I hardly ate while I was ill, obviously, to lose that much weight that fast. And they would, you know, there were certain things that I ate then that I don't eat today because I know that those are those foods that I don't get into. Because of that cancer experience, I retired earlier than I had planned on. And thank God I didn't know that I was never going back to the classroom, because that would have been tough. I loved teaching, and I worked with second and third graders. And if you ever want to go someplace and get loved, absolutely, totally, no matter what, that's a place to do it. So I got surrounded with love almost every day of my life. It was fabulous. But I couldn't go back to the kids because my immune system had been so damaged by all the chemo and the radiation. So we retired a year early and had planned to move to Montana. We had our land, our home was being built. So with great excitement, we moved to Montana. And that was a total change. And I wasn't going to meetings. Ken did. Ken always has gone to meetings. But I take these vacations. And when I got back into the food in Montana, because it was sort of an angst feeling. I can't even describe it. But one of the ways I put it into words, which doesn't adequately do it, is I had all these wonderful new friends, and I would say, I know they like me, but nobody loves me. And I'd left those people who had known me for so many years, who loved me. And I felt just disconnected because I forgot where the source of love was, and that's God. And then, you know, it was coming. It was always coming. I just wasn't feeling it yet. And we met the Jeanette that I spoke about, and learned that she'd been holding a meeting for 1 year by herself, waiting. You know, the room was there. She was there waiting for someone so that there would be recovery when they came looking for it. When Ken told me that, I thought to myself, there's no way that I will let Jeanette sit in a meeting by herself. And I started going to meetings. We had a small group at our house to listen to some tapes, Natalie B. and SB from the Los Angeles area. It jump-started the five of us. and we committed our recovery to each other. We went to a retreat in May of 98 on the Flathead in Montana, and Peter S. was there, and he was very significant in our recovery, especially my husband's. And they were looking for a secretary of intergroup. And I knew right away that I had to say yes, I was going to do that, because I knew that if I had some kind of service position, I couldn't do my little song and dance in and out, in and out. I was going to be there. And so I volunteered to be the secretary, and it worked. We started a meeting in Stevensville. There's still the meeting in Hamilton. We have two meetings a week, very small, about 6 to 8 of us. Sometimes we get all the way up to 12. There are meetings in Missoula that we go to. I'm doing a lot of speaking. Just last weekend were in California, where we led a retreat for our old home intergroup, which was really something. There were only 4 out of the 31 people who were there when we came in 81. And one of those gals was there shortly after I came in, and she probably came in the program in 72 or so. And what I was doing was maintaining an unhealthy weight for me, because I was negotiating this food plan that I had come up with on a daily basis. So I had lost a few pounds, yeah, but I was maintaining up and down 5 pounds at that particular level. And I was feeling more and more uncomfortable and feeling quite a bit of shame and guilt for being here for so many years and standing up and sharing recovery, but not manifesting a physical recovery. And that began to really bother me. And in a meeting last fall, I got my wake-up call in a very unpleasant way. And it was through a friend in program who, after I pitched about, boy, it's just so much easier if you're an alcoholic and, you know, you can put the plug in the jug and you can, you know, but gosh, we have to deal with food 3 times a day. Oh, and just whining big time. And when my friend followed my pitch, it was a bit of crosstalk going on there, and she said, you know, I'm really getting sick and tired of hearing about how easy it is for alcoholics and how hard it is for compulsive overeaters, and why don't you just quit your whining and do it? Well, I didn't act like I was hurt. I mean, you know, she made an amends right after the meeting, because she knew. She pulled my covers is what she did. And I accepted the amends, but it stuck in my brain. And she's right. You know, God was talking through her. I needed a wake-up call, and she gave it to me. And what happened is God has revealed to me this really great food plan that works for me, and it works for Ken. So we're on the same food plan now for the first time in a long time, and it's really comfortable. I am doing what AG said last year. You know, abstinence is when you're either going towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. Well, I thought I was abstaining, but I wasn't. I didn't have the right food plan. And I don't beat myself up for that anymore, because I know this is about progress. It's not about perfection. Even though I wanted to come today and give you the perfect little talk about threefold recovery, all I do is show up and share whatever God has for me to share with you. And all I have to share with you is who I am. And today I feel strong and confident, and I am fully in my recovery. And we're 34 years. I can say that fully, honestly, for the first time. So if some of you are feeling a little, you know, like, well, I don't want to depress you because, oh, does it have to take that long? But I also want to give you some hope that if it just doesn't seem to be happening, it will happen. But I had to stop being in charge of it. I had to turn it over. And that's what I learned from my experience with cancer. My spiritual recovery been incredible. My God is unlimited, and he's out of the box, and there's no place where he is not. He is right here, right now, in around and through me and you and everybody. And I know that now. And now I know I have to concentrate on my recovery. I can't do yours. I can pray for yours and I could want yours for you, but I can't do it for you. And nobody can do it for me. And we can't even do it for each other. And my... Now I'm just jumping around. That was in my emotional recovery. I changed my thinking on all areas of my life. I can't relate to the girl that I was when I decided to marry the first time because I went to the Prudential building to apply for a job, and they said they weren't accepting applications, so I went down and told my first husband, who wasn't then, that I would marry him because I was too afraid. I'd stepped out and, you know, so I better get married because I would not be doing that today. I would not. God is in the details of my life, and I have learned to trust him, and I learned to trust him through the recovery from my cancer when I realized that you can turn over everything, the big and the small stuff. And this rock is the symbol. This is a triangle rock. And I picked it up Friday morning right in a little rock garden that we have at our home. And this symbolizes our recovery. We've got the physical, the emotional, based on the spiritual. And as long as my spiritual condition is fit, then my physical and my emotional will be also. But if I try to work them separately, which is what I did for so many years, then it falls in on itself. And I don't choose to allow that to happen anymore. I am very committed to my own recovery now. But it isn't just that. It's just like my recovery is not just for me anymore. It's for you. Because I know that if I'm recovering, it's going to give you more strength for your recovery. And if you're recovering and talking about it, it's going to give me more strength. And I finally understand what this whole thing is. This is a we program. And that's why I'm here today, because I want to share the hope of this program. It will work as long as we make that choice to let it work. And if we don't make it, there's only two options. We either recover or we don't. And if we don't, we just go out there and slowly die. And I don't want to do that. I want to live every single day the rest of my life. So I want to thank you very much.
Okay, now we're just going to open this up for sharing. And please come to the microphone so we can catch you on tape. And if you don't want to say your name, then that's just fine. You can remain anonymous.
I'm Steve, recovering compulsive eater. Well, from Olympia, Washington. And my wife's a normie, and she says, yeah, well, I scale from 0 to 10. I usually stop when I'm about a 7. You know, 10 being absolutely stuffed, 0 being stomach empty. I stop at about a 7. I said, for me, 7 is I am full. I have no room left for food except maybe in one leg, and I'm ready to lie down and cut open the leg and put some more in. I shorted out my full switch a long time ago, but the only way that I could do this is through OA. I mean, I used to teach nutrition. I knew exactly what was in the foods I was eating. You know, whoever says I only need knowledge, I do them the great service of waiting till I'm out of their sight before I laugh. Because I didn't need knowledge. I needed a higher power. I needed to not do this alone. I needed you, and I needed a higher power. And I needed to pray before I eat, and I needed a prayer other than, please God, don't let anybody see me eat this. That was my prayer before I ate. when I got in the program. And for me, weight was not the issue. I probably have 15 pounds of physical recovery, but about 3,000 pounds I've lost between the ears. And I'm grateful that on February 12, 93, I went to a meeting in Olympia. There were five people there who were abstinent then, who are still abstinent today. And I got the first step that night and got a sponsor the next day. I couldn't do it without a sponsor. If I didn't have a sponsor, you know, I needed somebody to call me on my stuff, you know. And I write down my food, and I pray every day. And each morning, even with 9.5 years of abstinence, I know that each morning I'm starting again. Each morning I have to commit. As a friend of mine in program says, the only way I'm abstinent longer than you is if I wake up before you. And I say the prayers in the morning, I say the prayers at night, and I read the promises every day. And I remember who's in charge, and that it isn't me. And then by working on it with the food, that means that I can apply it to all areas of my life. And there isn't anything that I can't turn over to God. I've been through divorce, remarriage, and my mother's death last year, all in program. The first thing I did when I found out my mother had died, I called my sponsor. I didn't call anybody else first. I called my sponsor. And then I made sure, I told my wife, I said, we got a couple days before we have to head back to Chicago. I need to hit a couple meetings before we leave. And then I called people from airports. I made calls every day that I was back in Chicago. And I couldn't. And then we got to a meeting as soon as I got back. Program comes first. I've learned that abstinence has to be the most important thing in my life. And each day I have to commit to it. Thank you.
I'm Susan, a grateful compulsive overeater in recovery, abstinent today. Hi, by the grace of God and the fellowship of the program. A little uncomfortable with the microphone. Thank you so much for the topic. I just want to claim my seat. I'm abstinent today. For me, every day, my sponsor suggested that not only I turn over my will for my food, but that I turn over my will to hate my guts so that I could be of service to others. And she suggested I try it for a day and see what happens. And I've been doing it every day since August, the beginning of August. And I don't hate myself today. And I am of service to others. And God is doing for me what I cannot do for myself. And I am having miracles in my life today. I'm doing things I never thought I could do, and it's only because I have God in my life, the fellowship, my sponsor, the literature, my food plan. But for me, every day, I do need to get on my knees and be powerless. And for me, the more I turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand God, I just find more recovery, and I do things I didn't know I could do. And I didn't believe that in the beginning. I came to get thin. I stayed to lose the weight in my head. And I have let go about 50 pounds, but I've let go of so much more between my ears. So I'm just really grateful. And I know for me, when I think I'm in charge, I end up binging my brains out. When I turn it over to God, I ask, you know, God for strength to get through the day. I ask for grace to get through the day. And I don't know. My sponsor said, just try it. And I thought, well, she's got some experience in the program. It's working for her. I'll act as if, even if I think it's a bunch of crap. And my life changed. So I just continue to believe all the people that came before me and their experience and their strength and their hope. And so I'm just grateful to be here. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm John McCapulsevita from Olympia, Washington. First of all, absence is the most important thing in my life, without exception. And if I don't treat it as a life or death matter, I may not be able to stay abstinent. And I'd like to qualify. I've been in the program since September 5th, 1991. my first meeting, 281 pounds. I've been absent since September 6th, 1991. I released 113 pounds, and that's through nothing I've done, but through working the steps. And I've done, my absence has been in progression. I first ate whatever I wanted for 9 months, and I also self-sponsored myself, like you heard last night. I didn't want to sponsor. And I lost 68 pounds eating whatever, you know, but I didn't eat between meals. And then when I couldn't come to meetings and say that I'd lost some weight, I said, maybe I better get a sponsor. So I got a sponsor, and since then, the recovery has been a lot better, and I started working the steps. But the thing is if I don't make absence the most important thing in my life, without exception, you know, I'm going to weigh 300, 400, or 500 pounds, and I've got the genes in me. Both my parents are full-blown alcoholics, and I don't drink. I haven't drank for 30 years. That's part of my plan of eating. I don't drink alcohol or tobacco or pop coffee or tea because I'm a pop addict, especially a Nutrasweet addict. And that's just happened working through the steps. And nobody's told me what to eat or not eat. I heard somebody say once that bananas weren't part of our food plan. And I said, if somebody told me that, and this is the way I'm, I've got to be right, I would eat bananas for a couple of months to lose weight. But what I do is I'd have one banana for breakfast and one banana for dinner. And then, you know, I'd win. I don't know what I'd win, you know. but that's the way I am, you know. And I'm that's one of my character defects, is I have to be right and prove a point. And I've done that many times in this program. But thank God, work on the steps and, you know, turn it over to God. I don't have to do that anymore. And another thing is, this is for a few men in here. I guess there's three of us, four of us. Anyway. This does not work when you're losing weight. I'd lost 60 or 65 pounds, and my wife was excited at first, but then she wasn't. And so I got off the scale one morning, and I said, what are you going to do about your weight? that was part of my ninth step, and to my wife, my current wife, still the same wife, 37 years, you know. I don't know why she stuck with me, but... Anyway, my daughter came home and said, "Dad, what's wrong with Mom?" And I said, "You'll have to ask her." And I don't think she ever found out. But anyway, I've learned not to abuse the tenth step, and because I did abuse it at first, and that's just through working the steps. So thanks for letting me share.
I'm Gail, compulsive overeater. I've been in program 15 years. I've been abstinent from sugar for 15 years. I remember my last conscious thought around sugar when I came in the door 15 years ago, there's no way in hell I can leave sugar. I did it the next day. I did it the next day. I did it the next day, and now it's got 15 years. Okay, now that's the impressive stuff. Now let me tell you the nuts and bolts. It's not quite so impressive. I'll talk about this weekend for a second. I have a lot of things I don't eat, and those are perfect. I have other things that I do that aren't so perfect. One of my things I deal with is allowing myself to get too full. But I think what helps that, I was at Assembly Thursday and Friday, and I went out to eat on both of those days. And of course, maybe all of you can handle going out to eat and not getting too full. I can't. But what saves me is I got too full on both of those days. But what saves me is what I call my preventive program. I go to retreats, I go to conventions, I call my sponsor, I have people that call me. And so the voice this morning was much louder than, the voice of recovery this morning was much louder than the voice of food. The voice of recovery said, put a salad in your car, sweetheart, and bring it with you today. Don't go out to lunch. I've got a salad in my car, I'm not going out to lunch today. And I'm having the dinner tonight, and it's a pretty respectable dinner. So, and I had my food this morning before I left. So I think, you know, even though I'm not perfect, now the things that I don't eat, like sugar, that's been pretty perfect, but other things aren't perfect. But as long as I do what I call my preventive program, the perfect is, you know, the doing better is a lot better than, lasts a lot longer than the not doing better. So this morning, I'm on a roll again, and it feels good. It felt much better this morning coming in, and by lunch, I'm going to be real resigned to eating that salad. It's probably going to taste pretty good. So, you know, that's just, I guess what I'm trying to share is that I came in at over 200 pounds. I don't wear anything near that now. I'm not perfect, but as long as I get darn good habits going, it still works. it still works. You know, I had 2 days where I got too full, and now I'm going to have a bunch of days where I don't, because that's what my preventive program does for me. It makes the voice of reason a lot stronger than the voice of food. Thanks.
Well, we want to thank you very much for your sharing, and would you please get into a nice big circle, and we'll say the Serenity Prayer together.